Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things Food Network with your favorite Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a multi-talented chef with 3 degrees on the podcast to talk about his experience as a first-generation Ghanaian American and bringing West African food to the forefront of the culinary conversation. He's a chef. You've seen him as a judge on Chopped. He's the host of Alex vs. America, and he's competing on the new season of Tournament of Champions. It's Eric Achapong. Eric, welcome to the podcast. Kind of funny coincidence. I had some photo memories pop up on my phone from 2 years ago this week. That's when we met. We were doing cooking demos in Vancouver, Washington, of all places.
The LA Day Resort. Exactly. Yeah. Jamie, what's going on? How are you?
I'm great. It's so great to talk to you because it's been so amazing just kind of watching your television career really explode over the last 2 years. I mean, it was already well on its way when I met you, but I'm excited to dive in on all things, Eric. But before we get to that, we need to address something else that's in your Instagram bio. Long-suffering New York Knicks fan.
Do we need to start there?
Yeah, let's unpack that. Let's get it out.
Oh, my goodness. All right, cool. Yeah, I mean, it's been passed down. It's my father who's been just a huge Knicks fan since, like, Sprewell days and Houston days and even before, like, Mason. And it was just his love for watching basketball and specifically the Knicks. When he came to America for the first time, he just kind of fell in love and with the team. And that's passed down to me. So long suffering is, like, truly, truly long suffering because I feel my father's pain as well through the years. It's crazy.
We wish you and the rest of the Knicks fans the best of luck on that. But you mentioned it. You were born and raised in New York City as a first generation Ghanaian American. How can you kind of describe the duality of being a New York City raised kid, but in a West African home?
My folks came here to the States, at least in the late 80s, and they had me pretty much soon after. And, like, I grew up in a very traditional West African home. So for you know, the majority of my adolescent life, childhood, and you know, when I was a little bit older, even my teenage years, it was just very, like, the cultural traditions. It was the outdoor rings. It was the parties with Daddy Lumba in the background. Like, it's real, like, great times that I remember. But then also on the flip side, as you mentioned, you know, I was eating bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches on my way to high school and, you know, hanging out with such an eclectic group of friends from Irish people to Spanish people to Hispanic people to, you know, everywhere in between. And then specifically the fact that I fell into, you know, falling in love with food in this industry. I think that was kind of like the makings for some really cool, like, creative stuff now in present time.
I mean, what do you remember most about those formative experiences with food, both in and out of your home. You mentioned the, you know, the bacon, egg and cheese from the bodega. What else do you remember?
There wasn't a good time and food wasn't involved. That's my number one memory. It's just like, it's so communal to us and my family. And I mean, to everyone, honestly, on this world and in this planet, like the best moments when I think about eating are when people are around and we're having a good time or we're sharing a moment, you know, good, bad or indifferent. And those are the things that I remember the most. And those are the things I cherish the most. And I also try to give to my, you know, diners and my guests and patrons that kind of like family, homely, everyone's welcome and truly like kick your feet off, but like expect some really great service and great food is something that is I love to receive and I love to give as well.
Did you always feel so connected to and maybe curious about your African roots, or was this something that kind of evolved as you got older?
I knew immediately that, you know, I was different, but then also in a different way, because I also knew some other like first generation friends. You know, I had a next door neighbor who was Albanian and his folks just came into the States right around the time my family did as well. So we have very like similar experiences, and just having the understanding of where my parents come from and where the culture is so thick and so heavy and so rich in my household was something that you can't necessarily get away from, you know. And I always kind of mentioned like whether it be food or whether I fell into like being a fashion designer or a musician, I think that culture and that love for, you know, being from West Africa would have kind of evolved and come out into that whatever kind of creative space I would have fell into.
And now as an adult, a parent, how are you fostering a deeper connection with that heritage?
It's my first time at it, you know, so I'm learning on the fly and I'm doing my best to speak the language, even though I am still learning the language as well and getting, you know, adapted and, you know, trying, you know, new foods with her and her grandmother, my mom comes over and we spend family time as well. And she's teaching her stories and she remembers from back home and things that she kind of like, I remember like those, you know, fairy tales that she would tell me, those moments that I totally cherished when I was younger. I see that kind of replicating for my daughter. And I think that's awesome. So it's kind of like a symbiotic moment. And I love it because it reminds me of myself, but then also reminds me of what I really kind of want to cherish and give to my daughter as she grows up.
You mentioned that, you know, food has always, you know, been around, been a part of your family, your life. But how clear was that path to culinary as you were growing up? Did you know that that's what you wanted to do, or did that take a little bit?
Once I realized that I wasn't going to make the Super Bowl, or excuse me, make the NFL and make it to the Super Bowl, I realized that, you know, food was something that I always kind of fell to. I loved cooking shows. That was like my first passion, Jamie. It was crazy. When I was younger, you know, 5, 6, 7, I would be watching like Yan Can Cook and Julia Childs and, you know, all the above around those, you know, PBS moments in those days. It was like things that was just kind of imprinted in me. And, you know, I was always in the kitchen watching my parents, watching my aunts and my uncles. And I was just kind of fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of great cooks and the family. And I kind of tried my hand at, you know, first baking because no one really did that. And I was just kind of the one who started making the cakes and you know, everything in between. And then I kind of started doing the savory stuff and really fell in love with it. So I knew at a really young age, I had a bug for just kind of culinary arts. And as most kids do at high school, they have that moment where they're, you know, that guidance counselor and they're sitting in front of them right before they graduate. And they're asking themselves, like, what is it that you want to do? Like, where are you going? And culinary arts was something that I really fell in love with. So I hopped into a vocational school and that's kind of where I got bit by the bug. And I kind of love the atmosphere. I love the brigade system. I love the structure. And I loved like the common, it was almost like an orchestra. I love that common goal to really achieve. Again, being a big competitor and a sports fan, that whole kind of camaraderie and really all for one and one for all kind of feel was cool. Surrounded by food and making good food. That was like mind blowing to me. And that's why I fell in love.
I mean, and you went all in. You have 3 degrees, one in culinary arts, one in nutrition, and a master of public health and international public health nutrition. So how has that focus and expertise in nutrition and health really shaped your perspective as a chef?
You know, funny enough, it was kind of around that same conversation with my guidance counselor talking about things that would probably set me apart. and I'm dating myself, but like 10, 15 years ago, I wasn't necessarily thinking about nutrition being such a huge part of the industry and being a huge part of, you know, the common kind of social psyche. We're all kind of, you know, aware of what we're putting in our bodies and we're all kind of reading the back of the labels and things like that. So I'm so glad that I took that advice. And then also I wanted to make my parents happy as well, because everyone in my family is like either a doctor or a nurse. And I kind of wanted to kind of just reinforce that degree that I had. And when you know better, you do better. And that's kind of a motto that I stick to. And it was kind of like you mentioned, a rabbit hole, because I started with culinary arts and I'm like, all right, what is this food actually? I love, you know, composing a dish. I love the acidic flavors. I love the fatty flavors. I love the salts. I love, you know, the heat. But what is it actually doing to our bodies? And on a greater scale, what is it doing to us as a society, a community, a state, a region, a country? So it kind of really adapts into so many different ways. And right around the time that I kind of fell in love with it, you know, it was chefs like Jose Andres, who was starting World Central Kitchen and really making a push for chefs to make a big stand and be more prominent in the public health arena. So it was kind of a symbiotic thing that all works together. And I'm really happy that I have that background and understanding, because it's so pivotal. It's so important to kind of speak to that intelligently now as a chef, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, you have a lot of doctors, nurses in the family. So, you know, your website has this quote that makes even more sense now: let food be thy medicine. What does that mean to you? And how do you practice that philosophy on a daily basis?
It's one that I heard in school. And the other kind of association that I have with that is you pay the farmer now or you pay the hospital later. So you do your best to really just put the best that you can in your body, you know, the freshest that you can, the most local and the most sustainable things that you can do to really eat. Not only are you sustaining yourself and your household, but you're also helping the world in your way as well. So it's a kind of philosophy that I fell in love with right around the same time that the nutrition and the public health bug, I guess I could say, got me. And I really stick to it. And it's one that I try to teach my family now. And I really kind of subscribe to. So, I mean, indulgence is always top notch, right? Like I always, I could pick out and do some really crazy things on a Saturday with some pizza and some like ice cream or whatever. But honestly, it's good to kind of have that balance and understand your body, number one. And understand, you know, what food is doing for you.
So do you believe that elevated cuisine, indulgence, and then also proper health and nutrition can all coexist?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. We eat on a spectrum. We have emotions, and food is such a huge part of that as well. So, you know, when you're in a conscious mind of, hey, I'm working out, I want to be more diligent with my diet, I want to be more active, whatever the case is, then you're doing all that you can to eat clean. But if you are, let's say, on your 30th birthday and, you know, you're out on vacation and you want to have some champagne and some foie gras, whatever the case is, and something really fatty as dessert or really an indulgence for dessert, you're totally justified to do that as well. So like live and understand the balance between everything. Think about what's best for you, what's health-wise, and just think about it in a holistic way. I think that's probably my approach and my suggestion for everybody.
I think that's good advice for sure. By the way, you were a top three finalist on Top Chef, which catapulted you further into the culinary spotlight. It was a risk, I think, you know, to focus on and present West African food and ingredients on the show, primarily because the judges had very limited context or benchmarks for those flavors and those dishes. How did you handle the pressure of having to break that glass ceiling?
It was pretty intimidating within myself, but I think ultimately I just decided on doing it. And, you know, if I had the opportunity to be on a show like Top Chef, one that I've watched since I was, oh my gosh, a kid, again, since like season 4 or 5 that I can remember. And I'd never seen West African food or African food period represented. And I always mention like being the second biggest continent, Africa is, it's so crazy that the food is just so misrepresented or not represented as well as it should be, and had definitely deserves that seat at the table. So sourcing, I guess you could say, from my background and the things that I grew up knowing and you know, remember eating and still eat and love to this day, I did my best to present that food in really unique ways and try to loop it into the challenges as strategic as possible. It worked out. It was really cool. I mean, Padma mentioned I'm also teaching, and I kind of think about that, you know, a few years back. And I kind of see it that way as well. Like, you know, as you mentioned, they weren't as abreast to a lot of the food or the cuisine, those flavors, but they kept eating and they kept going at it. And they were just
it's
like,
always a good sign.
Yeah, yeah. And exactly right. And I'm like waiting to see, you know, if they really like it. And they did 9 times out of 10. And it was just, you know, so nuts. I remember having a dream, and this is a very, very true story. I remember having a dream maybe like 4 or 5 years ago about serving fufu to Tom Colicchio on Top Chef. The dream was so vivid. Like he was actually in there with his hands and grabbing it with the soup, and it was all over his hands. And it was like down and dirty. But the fact that I actually did that, and you know, it was a more formal atmosphere, of course. So he wasn't going as crazy as I thought he would, but or dreamed he would. He did it, and it was kind of like a dream that was realized, and it was like a crazy moment. So you know, there was a lot of like I feel some divine kind of intervention with that, and just right moment, right time. And I'm just kind of happy that I was there to do it.
What does it mean to you that you were able to bring a spotlight to that cuisine? Like you said, you hadn't seen that represented on screen prior to that format. What did that mean to you?
I think about it as just being another kind of stepping stone or pillar to the whole kind of dialogue and the conversation, the lexicon of what West African food is. I thought it'd be really cool to do that. I could have came in doing, you know, modern American or modern French or Italian and a lot of stuff that I grew up learning and working in restaurants. I wanted to cook West African food because I feel like, and I know that it has and it deserves a seat at the table. But that doesn't mean that it hasn't been, you know, other chefs as well that have done their part, whether through books. You have Jessica B. Harris, you have Pierre Tom, you have Chef Kwame Onwuachi, you have so many other chefs, you know, Alexander Smalls, that have been cooking and speaking and celebrating this food. And there's so many chefs that I'm, you know, forgetting right now, but it's one of those things where I'm happy to be a part of that conversation. I'm happy to have put my kind of spin and my appreciation and I guess my creativity towards the food that I love and grew up eating and doing that on a national level and in front of these amazing chefs.
Before the show, you had already garnered great professional success. You'd worked in Michelin star restaurants. You and your wife and business partner created Pinch and Plate, where together you guys produce intimate, memorable dinner parties. First of all, how did you and Janelle meet?
Oh my goodness, that's another podcast. So, you know, it's so crazy because it's a he say she say story. But all in all,
aren't they all?
Yeah, I know, right? But it was at a party in Newark, New Jersey, and me and my best friends were throwing it for another buddy of ours. She came to the party just moving to New York City. We met at the party, but I don't remember meeting her. That's the crazy
part. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. Here's where her story gets a little bit better than mine. You know, we end up connecting a few weeks later, and really the rest was history. So unbeknownst to me, I had no idea about her decorating skills. And she had a home that she built, or excuse me, that she bought in DC when she was really young, and she didn't have that much money to kind of furnish it. So she just got super creative. And when she was done with it, it was just like completely like you would think you're walking into like MTV Cribs. So it was really cool to for her to kind of see that. And she has that in her blood. Her father's a carpenter. Her dad is a contractor. Her grandfather is a contractor. So she wanted to do a dinner party for her girlfriends, her boyfriend being the chef. She asked me to do it. And, you know, I turned the corner after finished prepping in the kitchen and I see this table that's completely decked out. I mean, like the candelabras, the flowers, the it was just like, I've never seen anything like that, especially in a, like, you know, an apartment. So I was like, whoa, like we both had this like eureka idea and that we can probably take the show on the road. And we did. And it was really fun. I mean, we started in New York, and when we moved to DMV, DC area, kind of picked up clients and continue to do it over here. And it's been a blast. You know, COVID and, you know, things like that kind of slowed everything down. And beforehand, you know, we just had our daughter Lennox as well. So we were kind of like slowing down and kind of thinking about 2.0 versions of things. It was just a blast to do it. And it was great to do it with her as well.
What do you think is the most important element to a successful dinner party?
Ambiance and the memories and really being comfortable. And I think that's why we were so successful. We took like the franticness away from the host, right? You're thinking about the drinks. You're thinking about the cocktails that you want to serve when everyone's walking in. You're thinking about the food. If you're doing chorused, oh my gosh, how many plates do I need? So there's so many things like that can really like freak you out. And then you're dressed, like you got to get ready. You got to take a shower. You got to look good, smell good, all that stuff. And then you got to welcome people and look like it was like nothing that, you know, ever happened. And that's tough. And we totally understand that. So especially when you're trying to entertain a lot of people at once. And, you know, at the times when we were gathering together more than six people and separated 6 feet apart, you know, we can bring a bunch of people in and really have intimate moments. And we noticed that that was a trend that was really like selling and excelling at the moment that we were doing it. And it was a blast. Like it was really cool. So I say, you know, just being cool, planning ahead, you know, if you are, you know, cooking or doing a dinner party for yourself or by yourself, plan ahead as best as you can. And then also remember that things are going to happen that are out of your control and you have to be okay with that. And I think when you can kind of surrender to that thought, the rest of the evening is really a breeze.
That's good advice for sure. I find myself just, you know, staying in the kitchen the whole time, but I like that. I want to make sure everybody's fed and no one's hungry and everybody has a drink.
Of course. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a beautiful part about being in the hospitality industry. Like you just want to like just you're so involved in everyone's kind of happiness. But it's OK. Like it's OK to compliment to the chef. It's OK to walk out there and see everybody.
Absolutely. Well, you have so many upcoming projects. I want to talk about your cookbook, which will be titled Sankofa. Can you share with us what that means, both in translation and to you personally?
Yeah. So Sankofa is an Adinkra Sibble, a traditional Sibble in the Akan Ashanti region of Africa and Ghana. Essentially, what it means is it's not too taboo to go back and fetch for what you may have forgotten, or you may have, you know, if you, you know, fall into a fight or a misinterpretation or a beef or a scuffle with someone, it's not too taboo to go back and kind of, you know, mend that and go back to your roots. And I take so much meaning in that personally, because growing up in the household, I think about those memories when I think about this book and my travels as well. And, you know, it's been the experiences that I've had not only in school, but then also in the, you know, restaurants and that I've worked in on the line and, you know, in the managerial roles and executive roles that like I want to kind of pull all that into. So it's really pulling from the jollof rice and the fufu and the kenke that I grew up eating. And it's a really traditional West African meals and trying to take those flavor profiles and those memories and trying to invoke them into a lot of the newer stuff that I like to do right now and still paying homage to those traditional dishes as well. So it's kind of like a tip of the cap to those dishes that I grew up eating and, you know, I'm trying to put those traditional dishes out and then those recipes out as best as I can. And then also having fun and kind of getting like my Jackson Pollard on and kind of showing the world what, you know, I love to do about and love about food right now on a global kind of scale as well. So it's kind of all of that. And that's my, you know, my interpretation of the for this book. And there's also a children's book that's going on as well. That's being written and I'm having a blast doing both. So it's a lot of hard work though. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
What has that process been like for creating the cookbook and the children's book as well?
See, if it's not like me in the kitchen, I have two left feet. So I'm like, I'm learning on the fly for a lot of this. And, you know, attaching author to my name now is pretty cool, but I'm also kind of learning about what it is to be an author. And it's like pulling those memories and talking to my mom and my dad and my sister and my brother about, you know, things that I probably don't have that clear memory, but it was super important in my life at the moment and that I want to, you know, put into the book. So it's been therapeutic. It's been really telling. It's been invoking so many memories and emotions as well. And a lot of laughter. I remember having a conversation with my mom about this one story with me living in Ghana when I was 3 years old. And it's crazy because it's my favorite thing to eat right now. It's called Puff Puff Bofrot, but it's just a pretty much like a donut, a West African kind of beignet, so to speak. When I was younger, she would say I'd always go out to the street vendors like super early in the morning before they even set up. And I'd be like, Bofrot, Bofrot, let me get some Bofrot. And like, they knew I was that kid. They knew that I was that kid that wanted like the first kind of like, you know, donut that was just fresh out the oil bath or whatever.
So yeah.
It's so crazy. That's like my favorite thing to eat now. But, you know, she laughs about it because she's like, that's why it's your favorite thing. And it's those memories that, you know, she probably forgot about and, you know, remembered that are really, really cool about this book.
Yeah, I'm sure it's kind of fun for both of you to relive all of those memories and those moments and be able to share it with everybody else. Is the children's book a cookbook as well, or is it more of just like a typical children's book?
So we're going to be highlighting two recipes from the actual, it's funny, I call them the adult book and the children's book, but it's highlighting two recipes from the adult book, but really it's just a fictional tale, very kind of kin to mine growing up and that duality that you spoke of earlier and going to school as a New York kid and New York City kid and having so many different friends and different experiences and just all in a very confined neighborhood in New York City. So I'm really excited to tell those stories and tell that story specifically. And it kind of gets into food and family and culture and all the things that really kind of shaped my life. So I'm really excited about it. But at the end, two of those recipes that are highlighted are going to be at the end of the book. So you can, kids and their family, their parents, their guardian, whomever, can go ahead and cook those recipes together.
That's really cool. What are the defining characteristics of the recipes in the adult book? and just, I guess, West African cuisine in general.
Stews, it's curries, it's soups. But flavor wise, it's like those warm spices. It's the nutmegs, the cloves, the cinnamon, calabash that we use like ninjas. It's just like the delicate hand and the mixture of spices and everything that's so pretty much indigenous to the land. So I love the technique. You know, we talk about mother sauces around the world, that tomato sauce that is kind of like the mother sauce of West Africa. And it blooms to so many different recipes and it stretches to so many different countries. It's one of those things that I love to research. And there's so many great flavors and you know, how that flavor and those flavors specifically have traveled throughout the diaspora and to the American South and to the Caribbean. It's a really cool story and one that I love to tell.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Jessica Bea Harris earlier and, you know, just reading about, like you said, like how some of these ingredients, flavors, influences have made their way over here to the United States. What other influences would we maybe recognize?
If you think about just like the travel and the, I guess, the migration between West Africa and to the American South and, you know, South Carolina and places like Louisiana, you talk about gumbo. Gumbo in Sierra Leone means okra. And it's an okra mm-hmm. stew. It's an okra-based stew. That's like a traditional staple. When I think about American food, that's like on the top five list, right? Or Mount Rushmore or whatever. Shrimp and grits. Shrimp and grits is another one with strong ties to West Africa. The Carolina rice is one that, you know, was brought over to the New World. So there's so many ties from the South and the use and the techniques as well. Preservation. I think about salting and pork and think about curing and all the things that, you know, slaves and ancestors and the folks that came after them, they preserved. And they've done this all orally, which is pretty crazy. Like they weren't, you know, able to read or write or pass that information down in that way. So to keep that rich, you know, beautiful history of food, pass it down through lineage, it's pretty crazy to think, but it's also delicious. And, you know, it's a great way to tell that story.
Yeah, it'd be fun to cook your way through the book. What pantry staples would you need in order to do that?
Salt, number one.
Yes.
Good about it. Yeah, you got to have salt. But cardamom, coriander, clove, nutmeg. You know, we talked about cinnamon as well. There's so many things like peri-peri peppers and ginger and onions, you know, shallots, garlic, all the different alliums. Like, there's so many things that we blend and we combine and, you know, we in different ratios and different combinations that just really create so many different flavors and amazing flavors. You know, if you want funky, you can add some dry shrimp or some powdered herring or some, you know, fish sauce. And if you want some sweet, you know, there's some palm sugar, palm wine, there's coconut sap. There's just so many different things that I love to cook and that's so tropical and so indigenous and just really scream and are really unique to the area of West Africa.
Eric's been busy filming a couple of exciting projects for Food Network, and we're going to talk all about them when we come back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But let's dive into all things Food Network now. You have been a busy guy. I feel like you're all over the network right now, filming a number of projects. But let's start with congratulations on being a part of Food Network's very first hot list for 2022. Yeah. If you're not aware, this is a list of food stars that Food Network thinks everyone needs to know about. And you were on that list. So what was your reaction when you found out you made the list?
Well, to make a list on anything Food Network is like, whoa. So when they told us that, or they told me specifically that I was on this inaugural list, it was just an honor, number one. And it's cool to get like all, to feel the traction for all the hard work that's been going on in my life recently. So I'm really appreciative of them kind of just recognizing all of that and wanting to kind of elevate this platform that I'm on as well. So I'm so honored to be a part of the Food Network family. It's been a complete blast meeting all the people in front of the camera, behind the camera, and everyone in between. It's been an honor and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, it's well deserved. Like I said, you've been all over the place and you are the host of the new competition special, Alex versus America, where Alex Guarnaschelli goes head to head with three chefs from across the country that are masters of the ingredients for that particular episode. They have a survival round and then the winner of that round chooses the elements for the final competition. What were your expectations going into hosting a show like this?
I don't know what I don't know. So I'm going back to my two.
Right.
So, you know what? In some ways, having conversations with the producers and directors before we even started, you know, we're doing everything via Zoom right now, but it would have been just like, a dinner or something like that. But they wanted that, you know, they wanted that kind of like, hey, talk to the camera, just speak to who you would, if there's a chef table or someone that's kind of really curious about food at the supermarket and they're asking you about something and kind of speak to that. And for whatever reason, I was like, you know what? I trust you because you want something. You want this fresh. You want something new. And you understood that I've never done this before. But they were like, hey, you're going to be in good hands. And it's crazy, Jamie, because I remember watching the trailer a few months later. And I was like, whoa, like completely baffled. Like, I look okay. Like, I look decent at this, right? I was like, okay. I wiped the sweat off my forehead. And I'm like, so it's just all credit to the editing team, honestly. But it was a complete blast. Chef Alex is a pro's pro. She really is. We kicked it off, or we first met rather, filming Chopped, an episode of Chopped. And like from the jump, as soon as I walked in and we hopped into hair and makeup, cracking jokes. And this is our first time meeting. And it was like we've met, years and years ago. So it was a really great time during Chopped. And, you know, I'm so thankful that experience kind of lingered in her mind, because when the show was kind of greenlit for her and she was looking, and, you know, the production team was looking for a host, she said Eric, and they reached out to me. I was available and scared. but I was like, you know what? Yeah. And the whole time when we were filming, it was just more of exactly what Alex and I were kind of kicking off when we were filming Chopped. So she's just a wealth of knowledge, not only about food, but about life, being from New York and traveling the world and getting to all the successes that she's been and all the failures that she's had and being so transparent about both as well. She's just an earnest and honest person that I'm completely blessed to know. So to watch her compete, you know, seeing it on TV is one thing and you're impressed, but to watch her compete in person, she's a ninja and there's no wasted movements. And she's so diligent about like what it is that she wants to do. So when she has her mindset, it's go. And it's normally 8 times out of 10, 9 times out of 10, a delicious like Michelin star plate.
Yes.
So it's crazy. It's insane to watch her cook.
She is incredible. I got to see her in person for Iron Chef Showdown. And you're right. Ninja is a great word to describe what she does in the kitchen and in a, specifically in a competition setting, because she is so laser focused. She's so intimidating and she's just so good. She's so good at what she does. You mentioned, you know, that you guys hit it off right away and you can see that on screen. I think you both have this genuine sense of camaraderie on the show. What do you think you have both learned from each other during this experience?
I would say for me, I learned the whole nother level to professionalism. This is nothing new to her. It's just the first time that she's had her own show and it's been a long time coming for that. So it's watching her navigate through, you know, the competition, but then also watching her be a mom at the same time, and also watching her, you know, talk and make sure that everything behind the scenes is good. She's always looking for the, you know, looking after the well-being of others as well. So just watching her be a pro's pro, again, as I mentioned earlier, like she really covers all bases, and she does it really effortlessly. So that's what I learned from her. And hopefully what she learned from me is, you know what, I was going to say the sneaker game, but she's already locked the key with that too. Like she was coming through every single day, Jamie, with the freshest kicks. So I would have said that, but she got me there as well. So hopefully if she's learned anything about, for me, it's, really, we share the love for family. We share the love for food, and really my approach and my kind of eye behind that. I think she really appreciates that. And she really honors that as well. So it's really love all around. Yeah.
What's it like behind the scenes when the cameras aren't rolling, you know, in between, you know, setting up shots and that kind of thing?
Either trying to get like a 10-minute nap, or you're online, you're trying to catch up on emails, and or you're trying to stuff something in your mouth because you're hungry. But when you do have like time to pause, it's really just catching up, you know, being human, talking about what was on Netflix or what just aired last week, and really just and those are really honestly the best parts, Jamie. And it's the recording and the competition is really, really fun, and it's what we're all there for. But it's the family, because these guys are there with each other hours and hours, and you know. I'm not, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. These, you know, everybody's there hours on end. So really getting to know one another and building that relationships, those relationships have been like the best part for me.
I mean, the show's format is really unique as well. You have, you know, her competition really choosing the variables for the first round. So, you know, it's this balance of trying to help themselves, but also mm-hmm. stay on the defensive, but also challenge Alex. What strategy seems to work?
Taking charge, number one. Don't be like pensive. Don't be like timid. Just go for it. When you have the opportunity to like speak your mind, say what you want to say and say why it's important. And, you know, all those things really matter in the grand scheme of things. You know, when you're picking those different elements to kind of like structure the challenge, you want to be as like prepared and as confident as you can be, because you're walking into really the abyss. You don't really know what you're walking into when the close is kind of released. So just be vocal and be confident. I think that right there, as I seen, you know, no spoiler alerts, has been successful for those who actually have gone, you know, who have done decent or have at least won, you know, an episode.
If you were competing against Alex, what would your strategy be?
Probably turn around and go the other way. No, honestly, I would love to. That'd be a lot of fun. You know, Jamie, one thing that I've noticed about Chef Alex that I try to even immediately kind of like do in my life now is she studies her opponent so well. Like she knows her personnel. So she knows where you're coming from. She knows, you know, the restaurants that you cook at, the pedigree that you have, the flavor profiles and you know that you really kind of are accustomed to. And she tries to outdo you. And the fact that she's like so versed, she has that luxury. So I would try to mimic that as much as possible. But then also it's kind of like a fool's errand as well. So I really, you know, do my best to play my game and kind of stick between the time and that we have and pray to God that the judges like my dish a little bit better than hers.
What is the most impressive dish that you've gotten to witness or taste on the show?
She did this layered lasagna in a like crock pot, like this little cute little vessel. And decadent, cheesy, tomatoey, the marinara sauce. Like, it was just all of the above, Jamie. One of the best things that I've eaten. And I was like stuffed because we just came off of lunch. So I was like, all right, you know, I'm just going to try it. But when I did, I was like, you know, I got it. This is like it right here. And the fact that she did it like on a whim, it was a Michelin star dish, in my opinion. It was just incredible. And that just speaks to, again, her expertise with everything. And, you know, whether it's like make a takeout, you know, late night indulgent kind of dish, or make something like an afternoon romantic dinner for two dish, she can cover all those bases. And it's really cool to watch her, especially, you know, now up close and personal. It's nuts.
Yeah. I mean, as a fellow chef, how often do you kind of find yourself, you know, biting your tongue when you're watching these competitors maybe, you know, go a certain way in their dish and you're like, they probably shouldn't do that.
You know, it's one that I know from both sides of the fence because I see it and I'm like, oh, that's a mistake. But then I also know it at being a competitor and one who's done, you know, some competitions before where you make some like boneheaded decisions and you're just like, oh, why did I just do that? And, you know, you're in your own head. So you can get lost sometimes as you're cooking. And, you know, sometimes that's a good thing, but sometimes you're missing the obvious as well. So I have so much sympathy, honestly. And I try my best with the spirit of the competition and the laws of, you know, everything that we kind of set forth for the show to just make people aware, like, hey, don't forget, you still got to incorporate this, or you still have to make sure that this is, you know, prevalent in your dish, just so that, you know, if they're scrambling to get to the plate or, you know, before the time runs out, they have, you know, everything that they need to face Alex pretty much.
The other cool thing about the show is there's a rotating panel of judges for each episode that are also, you know, masters of those ingredients that we're seeing in the dishes. Who are some of your favorite faces on the judging panel?
It's been a blast having Antonia Lafonso there. She was a great judge. We had Michael Voltaggio. We've had Chet Tila was pretty hilarious as well. Watching him was pretty cool as well, and how he kind of conducts his business as a judge and as a TV personality, and just learning from everybody. It was just a lot of fun. And for me, it was again, those moments behind the scenes, the trailer moments, you know, just talking and sharing stories. And everyone's really excited about the competition, but you also can't say as much. So that's like another kind of song and dance and that they're just doing as everything's happening. But it was a blast just getting to know everybody. And it was really cool to kind of keep those relationships going.
Yeah. And the plates are judged with blind taste testing. Do they really not know, you know, which one is Alex's and which ones are the competitors?
No, 1000%. It's and that's what I love about the show, the anonymity that's behind. It's kind of just layered. Not only are you competing against the elements and those variables, but then also the blind tasting from these judges. As you mentioned, they're also experts in the cuisine or the topic of the episode. It's so like raw, it's so clear, and they don't know who Alex is at all. You know, some people have guessed and were right, but then also a bunch of judges have guessed and were completely wrong as well. So it's cool to kind of see, especially the relationships, you know, some of these judges, Alex has known for some years and they know her food, they know her style, they've eaten her dishes before. So they kind of get an understanding where, you know, she might be going if this was the kind of rules and parameters as far as the elements that were given to her. And it's hilarious. I wish there was like behind the scenes of those moments, like the unedited moments between the judges when they're like, okay, I don't want to offend anybody, but is this Alex's? Like,
<it's pretty cool. laughs> That's awesome. Another show with a completely blind tasting is Tournament of Champions. And the next season was just announced. It premieres on February 27th, and you are competing. No spoilers, but give us a little teaser, like what we can expect to see on this upcoming season.
Well, number one, this third season is just bigger, better, and badder. There's 32 chefs competing for this one title.
Wow.
and the money grab, there's $100K on the line. So all the stakes are there. And that randomizer, it's still daunting. It's still scary, but it was such a blast doing that show. The guy is an incredible host. It's really the challenge of a lifetime. And I was so glad to be a part of it. It's really, 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 really hard. It really is. But it's also really rewarding because when you can kind of figure out a dish on the fly and you can cook it and it's delicious, there's really some cool validation with that. So many great chefs. It's funny because we're like, you know, with 32 chefs all competing right here in one area, like how's the food for the rest of America right now? Like hopefully it's kind of like keeping its par, but it was cool that everyone kind of got involved and it's a competition. It really is.
We've had quite a few competitors on the pod. I think all of them have said that this is the toughest food competition show that they've ever done. What makes the format so daunting, so challenging?
Yeah, bar none, I would say as well. It's tough. There are things that are in your wheelhouse that, you know, are paired with things that are outside your wheelhouse. There is probably a produce that you've never worked with that might be on the randomizer. There's protein that you probably never worked with that might be on the randomizer. There's so many different things that can throw you off. There's also the blind tasting, you know, as well, that kind of adds another layer. I always kind of equate it to like playing golf. You know, there's so many other people, 32 or 31 in my case on the field, but it's really just you versus you and you versus the randomizer. And when you can kind of like not let it beat you or trick you out, and you can kind of have a focus immediately on what it is that you want to do, then you put yourself in the best position. But to do all of that on the fly as that time is ticking, and guy is so slick with it when he gets that 3-2-1 go, it's so tough. So I agree with everyone else. It's definitely the most difficult competition show out there for sure. The one at least that I've done, and you know, speaking with everybody else that they've done as well.
Do you prepare at all for it? Like, do you practice or are you just like go in blind and just, you know, see what happens?
Yeah, it's like an SAT. Like you can, right? But like, yeah. what are you really getting? Like the randomizer is just that, Jamie. Like it can throw the craziest combination at you. And, you know, you can be prepared to do one thing or have like a comfortability doing another. But, you know, the timing could be completely off and you may not have enough time to do that thought. And then, you know, you're wasting time as you're trying to figure out something else to do or plan B. So it's just all these like different elements that just make it the most difficult thing. But really, there's not much that you can study for. But you practice, you know, run the line a little bit. You read some cookbooks. You try to study the other chefs, you know, as best as possible. You watch the show. So that was really cool to try to at least put myself in the mindset of if this randomizer threw me something similar, what would I do?
Yeah, no, it's fun. I think, you know, both of us being sports fans can appreciate the bracket style, you know, yeah, format of it. It just makes it, you know, win or go home. It's very, stakes are high for sure. We've also seen you grace the set of Chopped as a judge, as you mentioned, your first time meeting Alex there. What's at the forefront of your mind when you're tasting and evaluating dishes on that show?
Seasoning and technique. That's like the number one thing. The story and the interpretation behind the dish is really what makes a good dish into a great one. But, you know, what's objective is, you know, does it have enough salt? Is it enough acid? Is it cooked to a medium rare? You know, you also, again, being in their shoes, know that this is extremely tough to do in a pressurized situation with cameras in front of you and there's a timer that's big as your head.
What basket ingredient would completely send you home, no questions asked?
Durian, probably. That's a tough one for me. And I had it for the first time when I was in Macau, and that was, it's tough.
What do you enjoy more, competing, judging, or hosting?
Now that I've got hosting at least one round under my belt, I want more. I love to compete. I love host. I love judging as well. It's nice to be on the other end of the table, you know, in something a lot cooler. You're not sweating. But the hosting thing for me, just because I've never done it before, judging I've never done before neither, but at least I can speak to food like that. But the hosting is another kind of like muscle, so to speak, that you have to pull and work on. So I want to continue to do that. And I was nervous as hell when I started, but I'm so comfortable. And by the time we were finished wrapping up with the last episode, I was like, wait, I can do more. Like, let's do another show.
Just do it now.
Because I felt like I was on a roll. So it was just one thing I wanted to, you know, continue doing because I had a blast at it. And I'm really just grateful that Food Network has given me that opportunity.
I'm curious, what does the future look like for you?
You know what? Once the restaurant industry as a whole kind of gets out this gray area that COVID's put us in the past couple of years, I really hope to open up a spot here, whether it be in D.C. I'm considering the West Coast. I'm considering California, but I really want to open up a place, and I have some backers that are excited to help out when the time is ready. So getting the book out would be really important, both books out, and really just continue to spread the gospel of that food that I love so much, and really kind of fuse that with other things as well. I think just having a global kind of approach to West African cuisine is what I really is in my zone right now. That's where I feel like I'm really most successful as far as my dishes and where I'm having the most fun creatively. So I want to kind of really explore that as much as possible. So yeah, just whatever projects, I have some really cool things on tap that I'm excited about that are kind of like not yet in writing. So I don't want to jinx it, but hopefully there's a really cool pop-up in New York City horizon coming up pretty soon. So yeah, I'm excited for that.
All right. Sign me up for that. If the last year is any indication, big things ahead, the sky is the limit. And it's been so fun watching your career, you know, blossom and develop. So we're going to finish things out with some rapid fire questions. And we have one final question for you here on Food Network Obsessed. All right. Mise en place or prep as you go?
Oh, mise en place.
Best piece of advice you've ever received?
Take your time.
What West African spots should we go to in New York City?
Papaye and there's so many other good spots in Harlem that it's just mom and pop spots, really, that you can go to. I would say that, yeah.
If you could only listen to one musical artist, who would it be?
Bob Marley.
Go to Washington, D.C. dinner spot.
Maketo. Shout out to Chef Eric Maketo. Yeah, 1,000%. Right. Yeah.
Favorite rainy day or comfort meal?
Chinese food, good movie, some blankets and good company. Yeah,
family. That sounds pretty perfect.
Yeah.
Describe being a dad in one word.
Chaotically fun. Is that I'm making up a word?
Oh yeah, that's okay. That's the worst. We'll take it. We'll accept it. Yes, I like that one. All right, snack you will never get tired of.
Cinnabons.
Really?
Yeah. Oh man, I'm so embarrassed. It's a guilty pleasure of mine, but someday I die. Yeah, cinnabons. Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been such a blast. Before we let you go, we do have one final question that we asked to all of our guests. And everyone has a different answer, as you can imagine when you hear it. What would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can throw some snacks in if you want. Whatever. It's your day. You can time travel, spend as much money as you want. Like there's basically no rules. So we just want to hear, what would you be eating on your perfect food day?
This is my favorite question of everything. Okay, so out of everything, breakfast. I love breakfast so much. So I'm going the lumberjack style. I'm going pancakes, eggs, some bacon, some coffee, a good newspaper or something to read, and some orange juice for sure. And man, for lunch is probably where I get a little indulgent, where I'll go for maybe like a really, really good steak, steak frites or like a steak salad, right? And then I'm going in between lunch and dinner right now. Yep. So if I could, I'm swinging over to the Bronx and I got to get my mom's fried yam and red snapper, like the different peppers. And that's just like my ultimate favorite thing to eat. And then I'm capping it off. I'm probably going to one of my favorite meals was in France at a restaurant, just this beautiful seafood risotto with like squid ink and a bunch of scallops and clams and mussels. And that just, oh my gosh, it's one dish that sticks to my head and sticks in my head. And I would probably go back to that. And it was first started off with like this beautiful caviar set with this like delicious, like rhubarb kind of like sous vide. It was just, oh gosh, ridiculous. And yeah, dessert, ice cream. I'm going ice cream. I'm going either Oreo cookies and cream style, or we're doing like Rocky Road.
Sounds perfect. A little bit of home, a little bit of, you know, all of your different influences mixed into one perfect day. And this has been so much fun. And I've so enjoyed, like I said, watching your career develop over the last few years since we met. It's all come full circle here on the podcast. So thank you so much for taking the time. Well, there is a reason that Eric is an on-camera favorite. He has such a charismatic energy. I really hope you can all catch him hosting the season finale of Alex vs. America this Sunday, January 30th at 10, 9 Central. And be sure to watch him compete on Tournament of Champions, premiering on Sunday, February 27th at 8, 7 Central. Both shows are on Food Network and streaming on Discovery+. Thanks so much for listening, and make sure you follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.